Hör upp allt folk och lyssna. Kom hit och hör vår sång om herrarna i höjden som regerar dagen lång.
Hello and welcome to a slightly different episode of Bröder Folkens Pod. As you may be able to tell from the fact that I'm speaking English, originally when we started the podcast, we said we wouldn't do this, but we also, this specific time, we decided it would be somewhat cruel to our guest if we spoke a language he didn't. So occasionally artistic compromises have to be made. Also unusually, although you listening to this won't be able to tell, we are recording this, well, I should say three of us are recording this on a Saturday night.
Yeah, which tell you a lot about like the general state of our lives and the social lives in particular.
Yeah. No, we raised the idea of, okay, I think what might work is if we do this on a weekend evening, and basically everyone was, yeah, we could do that. So, as I mentioned, it is only Saturday night for three of us, because this is, I think, one of the longest distance podcasts it is possible to make.
Yeah, probably.
At least, definitely the longest distance one I've ever made. Because we are, in fact, 12 time zones away from our guest.
I mean, you could do more, like, time zone-wise, at least. You could have, like, a podcast with someone from, like, French Polynesia and Hawaii. That would be, like, 25 hours?
Yeah, but that would require us to have to have someone on from France or the US, and I don't think we're ready for that.
It does strike me just now. Well, what time zones are the Norwegian Antarctic stations in?
I'm not sure. There's also not a lot of people there. And the ones that are there probably have better things to do than talk to us.
But speaking about people who apparently don't have better things to do,
bafflingly.
Yeah, please let us introduce our guest, former Green Party of New Zealand candidate for, and please correct my pronunciation. No, actually, I can't.
Dunedin. It's Scottish. Dunedin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Francisco Hernandez, who was the third most successful Green Party electorate candidate for their election last year.
And what does that mean concretely?
I think it means I got the third most candidate votes out of any Green candidate in the country.
Yeah, and like a respectable 27%, if you round up, and we round up. This is a round up podcast. Unfortunately, yeah, thank you. Unfortunately, not enough to go all the way yet. But that's in a way good for us, because then you could be on here instead of having to do real work.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's good for your social life, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's also like means that you can give more, you know, honest views. You don't have to stick to the party line as much when you're
right. Exactly, because as we mentioned, you are a member of the New Zealand Green Party.
Yeah, that's right.
And we, I think it's safe to say we on this podcast have our issues with the Green movement. Although. My impression, I don't know as much about the Greens in New Zealand as I do the ones in Australia, but they seem to be better than our ones, broadly speaking.
Well, I think the difference is that in the Anglosphere, you generally don't have like real socialist parties, so the Greens are sort of the best option available.
Yes.
Whereas in Scandinavia, there's no good reason to vote for a Green Party. You're just being weird.
I think there's something to that in that, you know, as you've correctly identified, in non-Anglosphere countries where there's, you know, a long history of proportional representation in parliament, the, you know, there are proper left-wing parties, whereas in countries like New Zealand, we've tended to occupy that political sphere. So our political, our green movements here are more red-green, whereas the kind of, you know, movements in Europe are, I would say, more blue-green in general.
Yeah. And of course, there's differences between the different Nordic countries as well.
That's right, yeah.
Like, I would say, I mean, as much as it pains me to admit it, I would say the Swedish Greens are probably among the better ones in the region. If you compare it to, like, the Finnish Greens, whose leader seems to be, or, like, recently said that her goal is to become a market liberal party.
Okay.
Which is great for someone whose political movement is supposed to be based on the idea of saving the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the risk of greatly slandering the co-leader of your party, it's a bit like if James Shaw had an entire party for himself.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, like, in both the center, there's this kind of fantasy that, like, James Shaw is like a kind of sellout centrist neoliberal. But if you look at the economic direction of the party, I mean, we've run under the most significant kind of progressive platform that any mainstream party has ever run in the last election. And, you know, that's with Shaw as our kind of finance spokesperson. So I don't think he's like ideologically committed to the center right. I think he has perhaps center-right aesthetics, but I think he's more of a guy who will kind of go along with a predominant ideological direction of the party. So if the party is kind of trending towards in a center-right way, he'll like go there. But if it's kind of trending towards the left, he'll like go left. He's a weather vane. You know, he's not a center-right guy. He's not a center-left guy. He's a weather vane. And that's both good and bad, but I don't think he's like necessarily a centrist neoliberal. He's
that's fair.
Yeah,
I would complain about this being inaccessible to our listeners, but I don't know if the number of people who know about specific green politicians in New Zealand is that much less than the number of people who know about the things we normally talk about. So
exactly,
So. So he's perfectly fair game, but okay, no, that's probably.
I feel
fair.
Like we should maybe start by giving kind of a general overview for people who, or like for listeners and members of the podcast who don't know that much about the workings of politics in New Zealand.
Yes. Please,
I'm happy to give that.
Yeah.
So, New Zealand is a parliamentary democracy in the South Pacific, next to Australia. Our political system is called mixed membership proportional, very similar to the German system before the reforms came in last year in Germany. So we have what's called the party list. And so you have two votes in New Zealand. There's a vote that you can cast for your electorate. And there's two kinds of electorates in New Zealand. There's what's called the general electorates, which are, I guess, electorates that anyone can vote in. And there's the Māori electorates. And those are electorates that you can be in if you're Māori. You can opt into either a Māori seat or a general electorate seat. And then your second vote is for the party vote, and the party vote is the one that determines the overall composition of parliament, but the electorate vote determines who represents you locally in your general or your Maori electorate. We've got 5 parties currently represented in parliament. So the biggest one is the National Party, and that's kind of your traditional liberal conservative kind of political party. There's the Labour Party, that's the kind of center-left, nominally social democratic, but in practice quite centrist sellout, party. There's the...
Yeah, they did some interesting things in the 80s.
They did.
Put it that way.
Yeah. They basically led the world in the economic reforms. They went harder than Thatcher did in some areas. And then there's the Greens, which are the kind of Green Party, but with kind of a strong kind of eco-socialist wing. I think the kind of ideological span of the Green Party runs from hard left to center-right, as is, the case in countries where there's no left-wing party represented in parliament, so the left-wingers kind of flock to the Greens. And then there's the ACT Party, which is the kind of libertarian...
The cool guys.
The libertarian kind of slash conservative slash right wing people.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Also, their logo looks like a printer ink ad.
Yes, it does. Correct me if I'm wrong, but ACT was also founded by the Labour finance minister who did of the neoliberal reforms.
He was founded by he was founded by some senior Labour cabinet ministers who drove the Rogernomics, the finance minister, but also like some incredibly senior cabinet people moved from Labour to ACT.
We love social democracy.
Very cool, yeah.
Okay, so this is
there is a very good documentary which I think is still on YouTube called Revolution.
Yes, yeah.
Which talks about this.
Yes,
the person. Basically, in New Zealand, in at least parts of the 80s, functionally, Labour was the right-wing party.
Yes, yeah. And then there's New Zealand First. That's the kind of more traditional conservative slash nationalist slash racist kind of center.
Our other favorites.
Yeah, yeah. They're kind of like maybe a little bit like AFD, but they kind of have an interesting twist to it because they're led by a Maori person, Winston Peters. So it's kind of like, even in New Zealand, our racists are slightly woke, maybe.
Yeah, my understanding, and once again, more than free to correct me. The primary purpose of New Zealand First is to ensure Winston Peters gets to have as many jobs as possible.
Yes, yeah, it's a personalist vehicle with like that where the ideology changes depending on what Winston wants, basically.
And let's be honest. Can we blame him?
I mean, if you can have success just vibing and doing what you want with your party, I mean, I can't blame him, but I don't want to, I have ideology, TM.
Stop idolizing the grind set and start idolizing whatever this is.
I'm looking at New Zealand First's election results now, and it appears they won all the Maori seats.
No, that was in 1996.
1996, yes.
Yeah.
That's definitely an interesting twist on like hard right politics. I can't imagine the Progress Party getting every single seat in the Sami Parliament, for instance.
I think someone made a joke that New Zealand First was putting the native back in nativism, so... Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think if you went through the devastation that, the Maori people did with the advent of, colonialism, I would understand why they would be skeptical about immigration. And obviously, immigration isn't the same as like colonialism, but I guess to someone...
Also, I can understand why they may at times not have been keen on the big parties.
Yes, exactly. And I think that brings us to the kind of next, to the last party, which is Te Pāti Māori, which is the Māori party. They won 6 out of 7 of the Māori seats in the last election. It's actually ironic that they overthrew all of the incumbent Labour candidates, and that the only Labour candidate who beat them was the one who ran against a former Labour minister who defected to Te Pāti Māori. So that's how badly Labour lost the Māori vote, that even a former candidate who switched to another party like lost.
Amazing. I also have to say that I really appreciate the parties of New Zealand, because except ACT, they all are exactly what they sound like they are. Like it's really convenient.
The names, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. They tell you exactly what they stand for. Yeah.
I mean, even ACT, if you look at the full name, Association Consumers and Taxpayers.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, whenever a group has the word taxpayer in their name, they don't want to be.
Yes. That's good.
Yeah. And once again...
Taxpayers for now.
And again, in their defense, of all the parties with that kind of vibe and that kind of name, ACT New Zealand sounds like they would have the least problematic opinions about the ethnicity of bankers and etc.
Yes.
Are you suggesting that Anders Lange's party for a strong reduction in taxes, duties, and public intervention might occasionally have been somewhat racist?
No, that would be slander. I don't slander people in this pod. I don't throw out random accusations of racism or pedophilia or the like. That has never
Don't read what he wrote on South Africa.
New Zealand had an election last year. How did that go?
What happened is, in kind of their limited defense, what happened to Labour basically happened to every kind of post-COVID incumbent government, in that a lot of them were kind of swept out of office following a combination of incumbency fatigue and also the kind of inflation wave that is still happening around the world as a result of the kind of free-flowing fiscal policies from COVID kind of affected the government. And, you know, we went from having a Labour government, which won, and this is something that's not really supposed to happen under mixed membership proportional systems, but they won a majority of the seats in Parliament. So they went from having like a majority to kind of winning 22%. So their vote kind of collapsed incredibly hard. I think some of that was the COVID incumbency fatigue, but also some of it was like Labour not really having any excuses. Sorry, 27%, not 22. So if you have a majority government, you can't really blame your coalition partners or really anyone.
Right, yeah, no, they love to do that.
Yes, exactly. Well,
that's something we all know and love as well.
Yeah.
Although, technically, I suppose the last centre-left government here didn't actually blame their actual coalition partners. They blamed the other parties the other parties they had an agreement with but weren't technically in the coalition because those parties wanted to be in opposition. It's incredibly confusing.
Okay, well, they'll blame anyone but themselves anyway.
It's awful and I hate it and I don't want to live here anymore.
Yeah. So yeah, you got to shoulder the blame for Labour not doing anything concrete with their big fuck off majority.
Yes, and people blamed them for that, and they lost a lot because of that.
Yeah, the end result appears to be that they lost half their seats. Everybody else gained seats.
Yes.
So maybe that strategy didn't quite work out for them.
Yeah, Labour bled votes everywhere. Like, they bled votes to the right, to the left. There's basically no area of the country where Labour didn't lose some kind of support. But I mean,
feel like when you lose basically half your vote in one cycle, that's going to happen.
Yes, yeah.
It's not all going to go in one direction.
Yeah, it went everywhere. And yeah, they lost basically all of the Maori seats except one. And the only Maori seat they didn't win was the one where their former minister stood as a candidate for Te Pāti Māori. So.
Amazing. So that leaves us here with a coalition from hell consisting of the National Party, ACT, and New Zealand First.
The Bahamas Coalition.
Yeah, that's the kind of yellow. I mean, it's yellow, black, and what's the other color in the Jamaican flag? It's not blue, is it? No, Bahamas.
No, but in the Bahamas flag, that one is blue, yellow, and black.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, so far, what they've done hasn't been promising. They've repealed that kind of collective bargaining agreements because, I mean, that was basically the only one unambiguously good thing that Labour did in the last term was introduce what's called fair pay agreements, which is basically sectoral bargaining where the union kind of negotiates a kind of contract on behalf of like everyone in the industry, which sets kind of minimum pay rates and conditions for everyone. I think you've got a system like that in Sweden and you've got a system like that in Australia. But yeah, they basically
In international sources is usually called the Nordic model, but we call it the Swedish model because we're like that.
Yeah, in Norway we also call it the Nordic model because we're nice with the new guys.
But yes, that was one of the first things they repealed, and one of the second things they repealed was like a kind of fee-based discount. So that was a kind of system where cars which were more intensely polluting got taxed a bit more, and then the revenue from that was kind of recycled to give discounts for cars that emitted less. So not only like electric cars, but also like more fuel efficient.
We had that as well. I forget if the current government got rid of it or not, but they have been clawing back most of the same things.
Yes. And yeah, I guess the other kind of big turn that this government is doing is that they're kind of hewing closer to the US-led kind of international foreign policy. You know, for all its flaws, I don't think the previous government would have like supported the kind of strikes in Yemen.
This is all sounding very familiar.
Yes, yeah.
And I don't like it.
Well, yeah. Scandinavia.
Although, that being said, our last government was able to support joining NATO before they got voted out. So, so that's cool.
Another difference is that Sweden has a military. New Zealand very barely does.
Yeah, we've got a small one.
Yeah,
New Zealand has three guys on a boat. Yeah,
they famously do not have any combat aircraft.
Yes, yeah. Well, we've got helicopters, but No fixed wing
aircraft. Yeah. Also the iconic Bob Semple tank from World War II.
Yes. Ah, yes.
Yeah.
I encourage all of the people listening to go and look up a picture of Bob Semple. And possibly also his tank, but mostly him. And I want you to pay special attention to his mustache.
Well, it was...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was quite popular before a certain Austrian painter kind of ruined it.
Was a different era.
But yes, the Bob Semple tank, a tractor with sheet metal and machine guns taped to it, basically. Awesome. I love it.
Yes.
I didn't realize, I'm just reading his Wikipedia article now, but apparently in later life he became an ardent anti-communist, so kind of...
Ah. Average. I mean, maybe the mustache got to his brain somehow.
This average social democrat.
I mean, genuinely, yes. A lot of that generation of social democrats, especially in the English-speaking world, is my impression. Basically got their entire political education from fighting communist influence in the trade union movement during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Well, not just the English-speaking world, very much a thing here as well.
I think, some of it was
at also... At least in Norway, it was a big part of the Labour Party governments of the late 40s and early 50s to crush the Communist Party of Norway through various not quite legal means, mass surveillance and blacklisting Communist Party members from various industries.
Yeah.
Not sure how it was in Sweden.
I think it was a bit less after the war, but there we did have internment camps for communists, which is something no one talks about. So that's very cool.
Yeah. But New Zealand, your new prime minister looks like Anglo Fredrik Reinfeldt.
No.
I was going to say he looks like an egg, but I guess not a huge difference between those two.
No, yeah. He looks like Reinfeldt if Reinfeldt was English and lived in Spain.
Which I guess is about what New Zealand is. In some ways.
Yeah. We as a rule do not comment or insult the looks of female politicians. Male politicians, on the other hand, are
fair game.
Open season.
Yeah.
And to be honest, that rule mostly seems to get mentioned after we've spent about 15 minutes talking about the looks of female politicians. But
no comment on that one.
We try.
Christopher Luxon, a man with like an amazing lack of hair. This like
even his eyebrows appear to be going.
To quote Milo Edwards off of Trash Future, he looks like he makes Telly Savalas look like he has a full head of hair.
Yeah, I'm. Are we going to find out now, Fran, that Luxon has some kind of disease or illness that has affected his hair?
He has alopecia.
Not that I know of. I think it's like maybe a style choice, but I'm not actually quite sure. But I mean, I think he lacks ideology as well. He's like a kind of classic empty suit, businessman focused kind of politician. He had an incredibly meteoric rise in his political career. He basically went from being, you know, a backbench MP to being prime minister in a span of 3 years. So that's, you know, regardless of being follically challenged, he's he's done an impressive job, like taking control of the National Party.
Wait, how did that happen? Because as far as I can tell, the New Zealand Parliament largely operates off of a Westminster model. So I presume you have like a shadow government and all those fake jobs for the opposition.
Yes. Yeah.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. So how did he jump ahead of the line of ahead of all of those guys to become the prime minister?
Well, part of it is that he'd kind of been groomed to leadership by National's previous prime minister, John Key. He'd been encouraged to politics by John Key, and he got kind of moved along to a safe seat, Botany. And yeah, I think part of it was also the leadership troubles of the National Party. So the National Party went through four different leaders in a span of 2 years. That kind of ideological bloodletting that creates space for an ambitious guy. So basically after the end of a leadership battle, Luxon would move like 10 places up, and then there'd be another one, and then he'd move 10 places up. So eventually he kind of just managed to rise his way to the top, basically after everyone in the National Party was exhausted by the infighting. And he just seemed like, you know, either a guy who would make for a relatively good effort but lose to the next government, or also like someone who could potentially lead him to government. So that's part of the reason he became prime minister.
I'm looking at the leadership now, and they went through four different leaders while Jacinda Ardern was prime minister, and she was not prime minister for very long, right?
She was prime minister for about 6 years.
About one term, or how long are parliaments?
That's two terms in New Zealand. We've got quite short terms.
Three-year terms? That's shorter than any other country I can think of off the top of my head.
We used to, until the 90s. I think everyone just got tired of elections.
Well, that's understandable, because in the 90s, you guys added another set of elections by joining the EU.
Yes.
So you had to cut down on national elections. It makes sense.
Can only have so much democracy. And to be fair, the amount of democracy the EU has probably is about equivalent to 1/4 of what we have. So I guess that's a fair change.
Yeah. So Fran, whenever you like feel down in the coming 3 to 12 years or 20, depending how long this current lot stays in, remember it could always be worse. You could join the EU.
That would be interesting if they did.
Yeah.
I mean, Australia is in Eurovision, so...
I think membership requirements are slightly stricter for the EU, but probably not by much.
I mean, I wouldn't mind joining.
I mean, if they want you and you're white enough.
Yeah. It's another set of elections to obsess about, so I wouldn't mind.
That is a plus side.
I mean, even before we joined the EU, we already had a set of elections as a bit. that people could just have a bit of fun in. To be fair, we still have those, which are the church elections.
The church elections?
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
The Church of Sweden is run by a body that is elected members. And the normal real parties run slates.
Oh, okay. So
at least a lot of them do. Or like you have groups that aren't technically the same as the real parties, but all their members are the same.
So the Greens run like a church slate.
Yep. Yes, they did.
Wow, that's kind of fun.
We have church elections in Norway as well, but the relationship between church politics and real politics is somewhat more obfuscated here. We don't just have like a list that's called the Social Democratic Church List or whatever. French Polynesia is part of the EU, right? So there is precedent for Pacific Islands in the EU.
Yeah, we just have to be colonized by...
I assume they're part of the EU, right? They could be like a weird situation.
I don't remember.
Like how Greenland is part of Denmark, which is part of the EU.
I know they don't use the euro in French Polynesia. But I don't know if they're in the EU or not.
So
I think they'd be in the EU through being France, but not as their own.
Yeah, but not all of... the overseas territories are in the EU, which is very confusing. Like, the Faroes and Greenland aren't.
Yeah.
Greenland actually left the EU. Until a few years ago, they were the only territory ever to do that.
Yeah, and also, French Polynesia is, like, fairly autonomous, right? It's not one of the fully integrated overseas territories.
I don't think so.
Regardless, this is the wrong group of Pacific Islands we should probably be talking about.
Yeah. To sum it up, New Zealand entry into the European Union would depend on your annexation by France.
Or another kind of EU state, presumably.
This is where I would make a really tasteless joke about the Rainbow Warrior.
Yeah, I'm saying there is slightly more precedent for French aggression against New Zealand than, for example, like, I don't know, Latvia.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, France is the only EU country with a real ocean-going navy. Well,
yes, they are now.
Since the UK left. There's also Spain and Italy, sort of, but not really. They do both have carriers, though. They are part of my favorite group of countries. Countries with one aircraft carrier and zero uses for it, together with Thailand.
Thailand!
I mean, Thailand arguably has a use case for it. You know, there's piracy in those waters. But a carrier aircraft is possible.
Yeah, but couldn't you just fly an aircraft from Thailand to there?
Yes.
Yeah. That's the thing about carriers. They are useful for exactly one thing, and that is suddenly having an airbase on the other side of the planet. And unless you regularly need airbases on the other side of the planet, there's probably better solutions to whatever your problem is.
There's better things to spend your money on, yeah.
Yeah. Although it would be very funny if New Zealand had a carrier.
Yeah, but
it
I mean,
when well, we you finally fixed wing aircraft, so
yes.
Well, that makes it.
I mean, to be
funnier.
Fair, wasn't there a thing where the UK got a new aircraft carrier that they couldn't use with any of their existing aircraft?
That sounds about right. They are. It is very.
It's the sort of thing they would do, yeah.
And yes, also a very Royal Navy thing to do.
Yes.
To be fair to New Zealand, the logo of our Air Force is Kiwi, which is a flightless bird. So maybe we're not meant to have that. we're into Evanir.
Great sign that.
Yeah.
Just the, high hopes.
The conquest of Tasmania is going to have to go through some other route. Air power will not be an option.
Yeah.
But to talk about something slightly funnier, but about the 23 election, as we at least slightly mentioned, the Green Party did improve by quite a bit.
That's right. We got our best ever result. We have 15 MPs for the first time, which is the most we've ever had. We improved our vote from the last election by something like 3.27%, which is, you know, pretty good. But yeah, I think people are pretty happy with our result. I feel like we could have done slightly better. We were polling at around 14-15% during the election, but we have a tendency to overpoll. But
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of these 15, like 12 are list seats, or
yeah, 13. No, sorry, 12 are list seats, and 12 are list seats, and 3 are electorate seats. So we won. Well, huh. Chloe Swarbrick won re-election to Auckland Central. Julianne Genter won Rongotai, and Tamitha Paul won Wellington Central. So two electorates in Wellington and one seat in Auckland.
And I'm not saying this to rub it in your face. I'm just saying it to emphasize that you're at least a semi-big deal in the Green Party. You were really close to get in on both the list side and the constituency side.
That's right, yes. We didn't run a two-tick campaign here in Dunedin, but even though we didn't, we still ended up doing... We ended up increasing the party vote by the most in Dunedin, and if we had done a two-tick campaign, we would have been really close to winning the electorate as well. Possibly might have won it as well. And I guess currently on the list after the resignation earlier this year, I'm about two spots away from getting into Parliament if two more Green MPs resign. So, yes, kind of.
So, without wishing anything ill on anyone, we're holding our terms for that at least two Green MPs make...
It's a little known fact, but parliamentary politics in New Zealand works on the same principles as the Klingon Navy. If you want to get ahead, you have to kill the person ahead of you.
Well, you know, I think people can resign for good reasons. So if someone got appointed to an ambassador position, or someone got, you know, appointed to head the UNFCCC, or did some international climate job, I would consider that a win for the, you know, the overall global green movement.
Or maybe if someone had a personal discovery and realized that they have to join a Buddhist monastery in Nepal.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, is that what
that would? Would arguably be good. That would probably be good for them. So you know, we're not wishing anything ill on anyone. Just saying that not a lot have to change before we can say that we had an MP on.
Yeah, we're just saying that Kathmandu is lovely this time of year.
Yeah.
It probably isn't. I mean, I'd imagine there's even more snow there than...
I guess it's winter there as well. They are in the Northern Hemisphere, technically.
Yeah, I think because of the altitudes, also, they've got snow all year round.
That's what I was thinking. The Himalayas are just permanently snowy.
It's about 7 degrees there, and according to the site AccuWeather, the air quality is very unhealthy.
Yeah,
I'd imagine so. Yes.
Yeah, that's what happens when you have a big city surrounded by mountains on all sides. It's not a good idea.
Wait, that sounds familiar.
You have the sea on one side.
Yeah, but you can still see the like lid of gases lying over the city when you when you're on top of one of the mountains in winter.
That's really depressing, actually.
Yeah, it's not great.
Grime, for Fran's sake, lives in a city that where rains 270 days a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it hasn't rained recently. It's been snowing instead.
I think that counts. I think that counts as well, as water falling from the sky.
Yeah, and also now it's starting to rain, so all that snow is going to freeze.
That snow is not going to stay snow for very long, no.
No, it's going to freeze, and it'll be impossible to go anywhere.
So I love that.
So are you the, Graham, are you the one, are you the Norwegian one?
Yes. About as far away from Sweden as you can get on the Scandinavian peninsula.
Right. Which isn't saying much, but...
Yeah.
Well, no. And yes, it's, I think, the rainiest city in Europe.
Oh, wow. Is there a common language, like, between Sweden and... Norway, or
I mean, that kind of that's kind of a matter of definition, I think.
Yeah,
it's, on paper, no, but in practice, we've been doing this podcast for 2 years with no issues.
Wow.
Technically speaking, different language. I mean, I say no issues. Occasionally, someone has had to Google a word.
Okay, so the languages are quite similar. Norwegian.
Yeah, the languages are very similar. As Max said, it's like occasionally I have to Google things. It took me a couple episodes to realize that Letland is just their word for Latvia and not like a made-up country. but it generally works.
So it's like, I guess, the difference between Australian and New Zealand English, maybe.
I mean, I don't think it's that close, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
And I imagine if... Australians spoke 10% worse.
And then, we're speaking worse than Norwegians or the Swedes.
For the sake of interpod peace and diplomacy, I'm not gonna answer. I won't answer that.
Wait, this reminds me of one thing. I was wondering, what are the common New Zealand stereotypes of Australians?
I think the common New Zealand stereotype of Australians is that they're kind of, you know, bogans. They like drive polluting cars. They're like racist. There's like a really famous cartoon.
So all the normal stereotypes about Australians.
Yeah, exactly. But there's like a really good cartoon about like New Zealand, like not joining the Australian Federation. And they're like, caricature of Australia is like this kind of brutish, kind of over-exaggerated guy. Ah, I found it. I'll put a link here. This is like kind of the New Zealand caricature of Australia, which is kind of stuck into a little bit about the like stereotype.
Oh my, that is not what I expected.
Wow, yeah.
I was expecting like, I don't know, like... Kind of a guy with like one of those cork hats with maybe some stink lines, but no.
No, this would be like horrifically racist if it wasn't about someone who's like 90% the same as you.
And like New Zealand is like being white savory in this cartoon, you know.
Yes, I can see the.
It's like there's two of them and. You know, two women, and I guess history will call them roommates, but they're holding hands, and you know, something. God,
exactly.
God bless New Zealand lesbians for saving them.
My aunt and her friend. Yeah.
But yeah, that's basically the biggest popular imagination.
Jesus Christ. I can't tear my eyes off his head. It's so fascinating.
It's so grotesque.
The teeth. My God, the teeth.
They really. The worst thing is, I can see.
This man is like 25% tooth by weight.
Like, the worst thing is, I can see without trying very hard, like the modern, Wojak version of this.
This is, you could say this was a proto Soyjack, really.
Yeah. That sorts out that. Thank you for
This is not what I expected, but yeah.
I mean, some real haters, man.
We had a lot of content last November, I think, when we listened to a podcast where Norway, or like a radio drama where Norway is still part of Sweden and is being treated as a colonial possession, and all the Swedes are racist towards the Norwegians. And kind of similar vibes.
Yeah, I mean,
Just two countries that, I mean, really, by all reasonable measures, are extremely similar, that still manage to find some completely outlandish stereotypes about the other one.
Yeah, we hate and love our neighbors the most, right?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like US and Canada, France and England, New Zealand and Australia.
Yeah, I mean, France and England do have the benefit of not being able to understand one another.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least the English generally not being able to understand the French.
And the French choosing to not understand the English. Yeah?
Exactly. Although I think, honestly, the whole stereotype about French people won't speak English, I think you kind of have to hand it to them.
Yeah. No, I have to.
Like, if I could get away with not speaking English, I would.
Me understanding Francisco here, that's ultimately the design of me being cucked by the Anglo-American world order.
Yeah,
exactly. And I mean, none of us should speak English.
It is genuinely like a product of the post-World War II international world order. Well into the 30s, German was by far the most spoken second language in Norway.
I think the Swedish school system switched from teaching German as the first foreign language to English in 1938.
Yeah, and
I can't imagine why they did it in that year.
Well, I genuinely can't imagine why Sweden did it that year.
But Graham, you're missing something here. Like the 4 years for German as a first language also was really common in Norway.
True.
Are we saying we wish that Kaiserreich was real?
I mean, we're mostly talking about the other world war here.
Yeah, Kaiserreich, the mod, you know.
I guess maybe. Depending on how some of the major early game events shake out, I think you could argue it's a better timeline than a real one.
Oh, yeah, if the Cindies win, I mean... You know,
yeah, I mean, probably better.
It very much depends how it goes. That's the thing with Kaiserreich.
I want to
say for the record here that I am surprised it took us 89 episodes to talk about that.
I mean, I think I've mentioned the vanilla versions of every Paradox game already.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Wait, I don't think I've referenced Victoria. I'm not smart enough to figure out trade networks.
I don't know economics.
Yeah.
Why are you making me do this?
You know, Albin, I bet you could probably get Ogenis on this podcast, and it would really blow up the popularity of this podcast.
Yeah, we could.
I mean, the issue...
We absolutely could. The problem is that he would then have to explain why he appeared alongside some random Scandinavian weirdos. You can at least excuse it with, they were far away. I thought they were normal. I'm sorry.
I thought this was the Swedish Greens reaching out for a podcast interview.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh boy. Yeah. But I think in a weird paradoxical kind of way, we would actually have more trouble getting guests on from our own countries who aren't like explicitly on the left.
Mm.
But enough about our internal program planning. We do have a strong tendency to have these discussions on mic, but
Fran, you mentioned a greater integration into the US-led military,
the rules-based world
framework. Yeah, rules-based world order. Is New Zealand involved in the UK, US, Australia military partnership for the Indo-Pacific thing that they announced a couple of years back?
No, but I think this current government wants to join it. AUKUS. I think it's like a big concern if we did end up joining it, because
first of all, how do you even fit NC in? AUKUS is already a very awkward acronym.
Well, exactly. It's a very awkward acronym. You're right. Absolutely. I think it would be weird and awkward for that reason. But also, I think...
That's actually the main reason we oppose it.
Our
attitude towards international agreements is always based on how easily they abbreviate.
And
if you can't get a good abbreviation, just come up with a name. So the other major Anglosphere cooperation mechanism that New Zealand definitely is part of, Five Eyes.
Mm. Yes.
That's a good name.
That's definitely nothing sinister about that.
It is extremely evil and things, sure, but it's a good name.
It is a good name. You can't deny the aesthetics of it. It's very...
Yeah, and especially for what it does. Like, it's really... It feels made up it feels fake. It's too good.
Yeah, it is very much something from, like, a Jason Bourne novel.
Yeah. I was going to say it kind of sounds like a fantasy character name. You know, like Five Eyes.
Yeah.
He's like a wizard.
Yeah, it is very Dungeons and Dragons now that you say it. Yeah.
It's like a wizard, but he's a spider as well.
He's a wizard. He's a spider, but he's had three of his eyes poked out.
Yeah.
three new eyes, you know, grafted on.
He's a wizard, he's a spider, he's an international intelligence network collaboration thingy.
Exactly.
Worst multiclass, so.
My question was kind of, what does New Zealand and I guess Canada, what do they do in Five Eyes? Because, I mean, obviously the US has a massive intelligence apparatus. The UK has MI6, who are world leaders in stupid Looney Tunes-ass plots. Australia is like useful, like
it's there. It's big. It's there.
It's there. It's in the Pacific. It's closer to China than the other two big ones. But what does New Zealand do? What does the New Zealand intelligence service look like?
Australia has a very rich history of insane white men who are worried that China and or Indonesia are going to invade, and that's of course a key thing to building an intelligence apparatus.
We have mentioned these books on the show before, but it is weird that, like, at least in Scandinavia, one of Australia's biggest cultural exports after like Mad Max is a book about what if the Indonesians came.
Tomorrow when the war began.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that was required reading in New Zealand in primary school.
I mean, it is kind of weird that it is such a big import, considering the surplus of books about what if the Russians came, written here.
Yeah, but it's more wholesome
We don't really need to import this kind of.
You don't need to make up paranoid fantasies. You can have your own homegrown ones.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But to answer your question,
I mean, when it comes to hating and being afraid of Russians, really, we've been doing it since long before it was cool.
Exactly. Yeah, 1700s, Gustav did. You know.
Oh, long before that.
Yeah. I guess what New Zealand brings to the table vis-a-vis the Five Eyes is like it's a question of geography, right? Like we are adjacent to like a lot of the Pacific countries, and I think we host like a spy base here in New Zealand. And I think part of it is like geopolitics, because like in the UN, all these kinds of little Pacific countries with like populations of 10,000, I mean, they all count for one vote. So yeah. In an era where kind of the US and China are kind of competing for Pacific Polynesian diplomacy, like New Zealand's role in the kind of Five Eyes.
All those like ethnic groups that have like 10,000 people living in their own country and then 50,000 people living in Auckland.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's, I guess, the value that that New Zealand brings to the kind of Five Eyes partnership. If you were to define it, I would say.
Okay. So you're sort of like the human face of Anglo-imperialism.
Yeah, the velvet glove.
Okay. That makes sense. That's sort of the same role we play in NATO.
Yes.
Yeah.
With our brilliant strategy of let's just invite these two guys who are fighting to Oslo and let them talk it out, and it's going to work. It didn't work the last 10 times, but this time it's going to work.
Yeah.
the famously successful Oslo Accord.
I mean, it worked for about 5 years there.
Can't deny that.
There was very little violence in Israel between May and September 1993 or whatever.
another flawless success from Norwegian leaders.
Right up until they shot the guys who made the agreement.
Yeah.
It was very successful.
So that's an alternative future for New Zealand. You can host the Auckland Accords between, let's say, like 14 of the factions involved in the Myanmar civil war.
Yeah, leaving out the other 37.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the Myanmar civil war is a fascinating subject.
I do feel like if we start
we could spend an episode just reading the names of the different like national armies.
Yes, and then we would finally get cancelled.
The Kara National Liberation Army.
Yes, they were really upset when they didn't get to see the manager.
It's like, you know, the MILF the MILFs in New Zealand.
Yes, in the Philippines, yeah.
Philippines, yeah. I mean, yeah.
The classic, one of the all-time classic newspaper headlines, Army sends rockets into MILF Haven.
Yeah, I just made a mistake that the mistake of not adding Philippine after MILF. So I just got the Google results of the acronym.
I think you'd probably get some of the same results if you just Google MILF.
Yeah, no, but I have trained my Google. It knows that I am after the obscure political group and not the 7 billion pornography videos. So it knows me by this point.
I'm kind of reminded of one time when I was, for some reason, doing research into Polish elections, because that's the kind of thing I do for fun. I tried googling BBVR or like BBWR, which is okay. So it's originally the name of the movement that Józef Piłsudski founded to support his dictatorship in the 20s, but then it was also the name that Lech Wałęsa chose for the political party to support his presidency in the 90s. So I was curious, if I Googled that abbreviation, which of them would come up first? And it turns out nearly all of the search results were for some kind of like entrepreneurship convention called Black Business Women Rule.
Oh, I'm going to be honest here.
That's not what you were expecting.
No.
Yeah.
Sometimes the internet gives us a third option, or in this case, a fourth one.
I was really expecting you to just have forgotten the R.
Yeah, no.
Okay, this is a sidetrack, but the nonpartisan block for cooperation with the government is the worst name I have seen in my life. Jesus Christ, that's fascism, but not even the fancy parts of fascism.
Yeah, it's just, we live in a society. What if we didn't, though?
We live in a society. Cooperate or I shoot you.
Yeah.
It's one kind of cooperation.
Yeah.
Sure enough. So we were allegedly talking about New Zealand. I am a little bit curious, because as you mentioned, New Zealand has kind of an unusual electoral system.
Yes.
In that there are these... I mean, I guess technically there are like three different types of election happening at the same time in, like, all within the parliamentary election alone.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious about how... about how campaigns are run. Since you have... I assume most of the time, at least, there is campaigning done to elect both people off of your party list and also a local candidate in your specific area.
Yeah, so most of the two big parties in New Zealand, that's the National and the Labour Party, they try and actively contest the electorate seats, whereas the smaller parties occasionally make an effort to target an electorate seat. So this is what I was referring to earlier when I said two-tick campaign. So a two-tick campaign is where you try and win the electorate, but you also try and win the party vote. Most of the time when we run a candidate for an area, we're going for a party vote campaign. So we're explicitly telling people, well, you can vote for me if you want, but you have to...
But the really, party you should vote for the Greens, for the party list.
And because it's the party list that determines the overall shape of parliament. It determines how many seats you can have in parliament. So it's seen as the most important thing. That's been changing recently in that the smaller parties have been going for electorate seats. So this election act... Act targeted two electorate seats. They already had one, but they also targeted Takanini, which is an electorate out in East Auckland. So the problem with, Tamaki, I mean, and that's kind of, if we were in Australia, you would call it a teal seat, in that it's kind of like a rich, wealthy area, but the people have kind of socially liberal views. And right. The national candidate was like a guy who was like super social conservative. When the Roe versus Wade judgment came in, he like tweeted how it was a good thing. And
oh, nice.
Yeah.
A thing that's like, not even happening in your country.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just generally, generally a big fan of women losing their rights.
Yes. Yeah. So he got unseated by the deputy leader
in the abstract,
of the ACT party. The small parties have been increasingly contesting the electorates and not just going for the party vote. And, you know, the Te Pāti Māori have always contested the Māori electorates, though. They've always been trying to win them. So I guess...
Yeah, that's kind of their main thing, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's in the name. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they don't stand they don't tend to stand candidates in general electorates. So they end up just usually voting for the Green candidates in general.
Right, because like as I understand it, right, if you the way you get to vote in the Maori electorates is you sign up for them, and that removes you from the voter roll for the general seats.
Yes, yeah. So you can choose which one to go to. You can go to the Maori electorate or the general electorate, and the
proportion. Although I assume there's some kind of like grandfather clause or some kind of rule for who can.
Yeah, you've got to be.
Who can opt into the Maori electorate.
You've got to be Maori to opt into a Maori electorate.
Yeah.
And the number of Maori who opt into the Maori electorate determines how many Maori electorates there are. Because I think there's about 500,000 or something Maori in New Zealand. And if they all chose to be in the Maori electorate, then there would be. Theoretically, like if every single Maori person chose to be in a Maori electorate, there would be like 12 of them. But because only about half of them choose to be in a Maori electorate, there's 7 Maori electorates, and the rest kind of have their votes counted with the general electorate. But even people voting in a Maori electorate and general electorate, their party votes counts towards the same party vote. So it's not as if Maori have a greater political voice in New Zealand. They kind of just choose what kind of seat they want to be in. And actually, originally, the origin of the Maori electorates was to actually suppress the Maori voice, because the number of Maori electorates was like less than the number of general electorates. So you would have, you know, a big fraction of the population just being herded into these Maori electorates. And, you know, if you'd actually accounted for how many Māori there were at the time the Māori electorates were created, there should have been like 10 of them or something, but there ended up just being 4. So they were kind of artificially gerrymandered.
Boundary. I mean, very similar to what they did in South Africa during apartheid.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. But nowadays, because
course it was basically the same kind of people.
Yes.
Within the same system.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing that I've always found interesting about New Zealand is that compared to other British settler colonies, you seem to have a far stronger of a sort of binational identity.
Yes, I would say that.
So I'm kind of curious how that developed so differently from, say, Canada or the US or Australia, where the prevailing national identity is very strongly, purely white European.
Yeah, I think it's to do with the like specific context of how New Zealand was settled. When the British took control of like New Zealand originally via treaty, they didn't. It's kind of very complicated to explain, but at the time New Zealand was colonized, there were several kind of different European groups that were interested in New Zealand. There was the British and primarily the French. And there was kind of the Maori tribes were quite adept at trying to play off the British and the French against each other. And a lot of them actually ended up, getting guns and even buying steamships and developing trading relationships with Australia. And originally the kind of population ratio was heavily favored Maori versus the European settlers, the whalers, the miners, the people who were coming to New Zealand. But because New Zealand didn't have sovereignty, it was kind of a complex situation. There were no laws that applied to people living in New Zealand because, obviously the Maori tribes weren't recognized as sovereign entities. So the Treaty of Waitangi was kind of a response to the kind of lawlessness that was occurring in the settlements and an attempt by the British to, recognize the Maori interest. And I guess there's difference in the two versions of the treaty because the Maori version of the treaty, the way that the wording translates to, didn't translate to the British having governance over Maori affairs. The British just had governance over the affairs of the Europeans that lived here, but it was translated in the British version as the Maori ceding sovereignty to New Zealand.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah, we love that.
Yes, but because of that difference in translation and even in the kind of, even in the British version where the British did have sovereignty over New Zealand, they still agreed to give certain rights to Maori, which they then repeatedly violated over the course of their settlement.
Of course.
But yeah, I guess that is the difference why...
The fact that they even bothered to sit down and negotiate is very different from what happened in Australia.
That's right. And that's because the Maori people were, I guess you could say, luckier with maybe the distance or luckier in being able to adopt to the British technologies. So, New Zealand, the British Crown didn't originally subjugate New Zealand by force. It was by, quote unquote, consent. And that's kind of led to the development of a, as you said, a more kind of binational framework in New Zealand where, Maori people have, to some extent, been integrated into the political decision-making of New Zealand. Even in the kind of 1890s, even in the 1910s, some of the kind of earliest deputy prime ministers of New Zealand were Maori who were from the loyalist tribes that sided with the crown. But I guess the kind of binationalism that the earlier New Zealanders expressed was a kind of that assimilationist bent of the us Maori, we have to basically become British people, but not even try and retain our culture. We have to be basically white people. But that's very much changed in, the 21st century New Zealand, where there's more of a desire to assert and preserve that Maori kind of culture.
Yeah, which is, it's all very interesting because, of course, I think it's not frequently discussed outside the Nordic region, but of course we also have in indigenous people and areas that were colonized within our countries.
Yes, is it the Sami in Sweden?
That's right, and they have, kind of a similar system where there's there is an elected body that they can opt into voting for, but of course this is completely separate from general elections, and also those bodies have very limited power. And I believe I'm not an expert in any of this by any means. This is something we've talked about having a guest on so we can do a proper episode about. But basically, of course, we have been repeatedly criticized by the UN for not respecting the rights of indigenous peoples. And I think at least I think a lot of Swedes are very uncomfortable with this idea of us as a country, that we have done many of the same things that we criticize countries like the US or Australia for. I don't really know if I have a specific point here with relation to like the way things were done in New Zealand, but I think it's interesting that there is like something of an alternative way to do things, even if, as you say, the British and later the New Zealand government haven't been great about recognizing the treaty rights of Maori people. The fact that the treaty even exists is really extraordinary.
Yeah, and it's that kind of, you know, even though the treaty was repeatedly violated, there's like, I guess, a process underway to recognize the sort of treaty violations and implement some degree of compensation to the Maori that were affected to that through the Waitangi Tribunal process. I think some of it has worked out better for some tribes than others. So, for example, the iwi in the South Island is called Kaitahu, and they've really massively benefited from the kind of the settlement because they were one of the first tribes to settle, and they've done like really good work in investing their settlements, and yeah, they're basically one of the most powerful kind of entities in the South Island because of the how well they've managed to invest their money and how powerful they've become because of that. So yeah, there's like, I guess, an alternative way forward. You don't like the kind of model where you exterminate all the native people isn't the only one, I guess, which is good. And even though you kind of, these kind of settler colonial governments might have breached the rights of the indigenous people, there's like frameworks for addressing and compensating them.
Yeah.
Frameworks for addressing problems and compensating them. That sounds like something Norway could maybe learn a thing or two about. We currently have an ongoing conflict regarding a wind power farm that was built in the middle of reindeer herding grounds used by the Sami people of the island, and the Supreme Court ruled that the building permit was a violation of Norway's duties under various international treaties regarding the rights of indigenous peoples.
Yeah, many of which Sweden hasn't even signed.
Yeah, and after the Supreme Court ruling, the government's response was, "Oops, guess we fucked up. We're not going to do anything about it."
Yeah, and
yeah, shame that happened. Oh yes. Well.
Yeah, and this is somewhat reminiscent of another famous event in history of the Norwegian treatment of the Sami, the Alta-Kautokeino conflict regarding the damming of a river in Finnmark, which was heavily opposed by the local Sami due to concerns that the damming process would flood once again reindeer herding lands. There too, the solution was to just build the thing and then say sorry. this dam is basically what the plot of Frozen 2 is about.
Oh, wow.
oh, my.
Which I find very funny.
Yeah.
It's a shame that the Frozen franchise went woke and made an anti-Norwegian movie. After the first one had a good, respectable anti-Danish plot.
Yeah, which is itself ironic considering what those movies are based on.
Yeah. Also, for context for Fran, I'm a kindergarten teacher. That's why I know the plot of modern Disney movies.
Well, I thought maybe you had a kid of your own, but yes.
No.
Yeah, we want to be very clear in defending Grime from any and all charges of being a Disney adult.
Yes.
These are not rumors to which we would subject our worst enemy.
Well, you know, if being Disney adult means enjoying Andor, I'm happy to be a Disney adult.
Well, I mean, I think Andor is probably respectable. I haven't actually gotten around to watching it, but I've...
You haven't watched it? What?
But I've heard nothing but good things about it.
Yeah, you gotta get around to it.
Yeah, someone I know described it as the Battle of Algiers, but sci-fi.
Yes, yeah, basically.
And I recently watched the Battle of Algiers, and yeah, that sounds interesting.
Yes. Most of the reason I haven't watched it is because I just, A, don't want to sign up for another streaming service, and B, I don't know, I feel like I'm too old to be pirating things.
No. That's a mindset you have to let go.
Yes, exactly. What? You're never too old.
We're the last generation that even knows how to pirate.
Well, exactly.
That is a point.
We're going to pass it on to the Zoomers. Plus, you could just do what a lot of people do and borrow your friends.
Nothing on earth makes me feel older than reading... those articles that come out every now and again about where, like, some computer science teacher in the US complains about the Zoomers.
Yeah.
And, like, not understanding the, or having to be taught the concept of a file directory.
But, I mean, it makes sense. They're used to interacting with the extremely user-friendly interface of phones and tablets. They don't know the struggles we've been through.
Yeah, they don't know how to use a DOS interface. Not like back in our day.
But maybe we should try to round off on...
Apparently we've been talking for 1.5 hours.
It's good. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, exactly. Francisco, it's been great to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
It's been really humbling. If there's something you want to, I don't know. I'm not really sure what you could say.
All of our listeners who are registered to vote in New Zealand.
Yeah. I mean, we might have one.
I mean, we might have a couple who listen to this episode specifically.
Yeah,
true.
I think, you know, it's just, I mean, three words, build party support. But also, you know, I guess democratic politics is like frustrating, especially when you're on the radical end of things. But we have to keep trying, like that kind of better world where with justice for all, you know, we're standing up against fascism and people who want to collaborate with fascism. Like, we have to keep going, we have to keep doing like it, like if only for the sake of saving our souls, even if we don't manage to save the world, because the future is looking scary. You know, the like climate breakdown is going to accelerate the rise of fascism, already the kind of politics of anti-immigration are becoming mainstream, not only like in Europe but across the wider world. And you know, we have a duty to stand up against it as people of the left, and we have to try and achieve socialism somehow, some way. And even if we fail, it'll still have been the right thing to do. So yes, keep up the good work.
I guess at the end of the day, it all comes down to Pascal's wager.
Yes, exactly.
If God exists, can you really afford to be a bad person?
Yes. Yeah, but a secular version of that, of just saving
the world. Yeah, of course.
So on that really good expansion of, I guess, what we have tried to say over the course of the last 2 years, but maybe have not lived up to ourselves, but from someone who is actually out there doing things.
Yeah, exactly. Someone whose idea of activism isn't sitting behind a desk and making fun of people's names.
I do that too, though.
Yeah. We need a multi-level strategy here.
Yeah. I mean,
activism and shitposting hand in hand.
Yeah. Really, a lack of making fun of people's names this episode. We promise to do better next time.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. You have yourself a lovely evening, and thanks for taking your Saturday night to talk to me.
Well, it's not like we were doing much, anyways.
Yeah, as mentioned.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yes, but thank you for coming on. It was great to have you.
Thank you. Have a lovely night. See you, everyone. Yep.
See you.
Bye.
Maranga mai te hunga mahi, he te kina ngahere. Ko te manahine ngaro, ko te waka mutato. Ka tira te wehi noa e te iwi, e tu. Ka huri ra te ao katoa, ka eke ra te taumata. Anei te whana kai tangata, whakapiri mai aku hoa. Ko te hunga mahi, ko te ao katoa. Anei te whana kai tangata, whakapiri mai aku hoa. Ko te hunga mahi, mō te ao katoa.